from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. They say the devil is in the details. Well, that may be more true for some than others. Getting it right is part of getting the job done in the American workplace. In fast-paced jobs today, that often requires multitasking. Mistakes and disorganization cause anxiety and conflict, and have always been considered the hallmark of a poor worker. But for roughly 8 million American adults, workplace demands can be mind-bogglingly complicated by attention deficit disorder. It's not just kids with ADD. It may be your coworker or your employee. It may be you. And don't despair, there can be an upside. Tonight on Point, adult ADD in the American workplace and a surprising view of its impact and implications. Is ADD a factor in your workplace, in your work, in your colleagues' work, your employees' work? Do you even know if it's a factor? Has ADD trailed you from childhood to the job? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Dr. John Rady, Assistant Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and Director of Research at Medfield Hospital. He is co-author of Driven to Distraction, Recognizing and Coping with Attention Deficit Disorder from Childhood Through Adulthood. Good evening and welcome, Dr. John Rady.
Great to be here.
Wonderful to have you. Also joining us in the studio is Nancy Rady, a pioneer in the field of personal and professional coaching for people with ADD and wife to John in a kind of husband-wife ADD duo. Good evening and welcome, Nancy Rady. Good to have
Hi.
You.
Hi. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello up there, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guests.
So here we are, adult ADD, and ADD in particular in the workplace. Quite a story in the Times Magazine yesterday brought it to our attention. We thought we'd dive in and take a closer look. It may be something that affects a lot of people personally or people right around them. John Rady, remind us, what is ADD, and what's the relationship between ADD in children and in adults? We understand 60% of kids with ADD go on to have it in their adult life. Paint a picture of the general, I don't know what you even call it, syndrome?
Syndrome, that's a good one. Or a brain difference is the one we like to talk about, the different kind of brain that follows people all the way through their lives, but certainly can present difficulty in adulthood, and that's what came to light in the 80s and 90s and why we're all hearing so much more about it in adults these days.
And the cause and symptoms?
The cause is an interaction with the genes and the environment, no question about it. It's a neurologic disorder that presents with symptoms of distractibility, impulsivity, and disorganization, all of which make it difficult in the workplace. But once these are recognized and dealt with and planned for, and if the disorder is treated, things can go quite a bit differently.
We hear a lot about ADD among kids, and particularly in school. We hear about it in terms of accommodating kids to help them learn and get through school, and also a lot about kids on various drugs that help them cope with ADD. What's the difference between treating or addressing adult ADD and childhood ADD? Is there a difference?
Yes, there usually is a difference. The impulsivity and hyperactivity sometimes diminishes quite a bit as the disorder moves into adulthood. And we usually see people who have more what we call the inattentive type of ADD, where they're distractible, they have a hard time sustaining attention, they lose things, their memory's poor. They have a poor time sense. They make bad mistakes over and over again. And this is what generally we see in the adult population. Treatment is about the same, although I must say treating adults is often much more rewarding than children because you have someone who's there with you agreeing that they have this problem and that they want help with it. So you have a ready ally, and where it's often very hard to get a child, and especially an adolescent, to buy into the fact that they have this problem and really be a partner in trying to do something about it.
Nancy Rady, you're focused on professional and personal coaching. I assume that for people with ADD, I assume that includes a lot of adults.
Yes, absolutely. Exclusively adults.
Exclusively adults. And when John goes down that list of symptoms, distractibility, impulsivity, disorganization, forgetfulness, can't find things, I mean, it sounds like almost from wherever you sit. If you're the employee, the employer, the coworker, this sounds like a recipe for impossible work situation. Is it?
Well, it depends on how the impact of the ADD. The one thing, though, that you can't discount about people with attention deficit disorder is they bring an awful lot of energy to the workplace and creativity. And so when we talk about the disorganization and the lack of attention to detail and all of those types of things, that's usually a small percentage of the job that they're in. And hopefully, and this is what I coach people to do, or what I coach them around, and that is to be in a job that's a good fit for them.
So getting to the right job is important. We'll come to that. But paint a couple of pictures for us. On the one hand, I guess first, an adult who may not even know they have ADD. Of the 8 million Americans who are supposed to have it, as I understand, only a small portion have been diagnosed and really understand they've got it. They're in the workplace. We may have listeners right now wondering, am I struggling with ADD? Why is it so hard for me? Paint a picture of what it's like to be an adult with ADD in a workplace that's challenging because of ADD.
Okay. So, in other words, what does the typical client look like when they come to me?
Yeah.
Usually they say, I cannot get out of my own way. I've tried everything, and I keep repeating the same patterns over and over again. I try to be on time. I try to be reliable, but the bottom line is people can't depend on me. They usually have issues in their personal life. It's just not limited to their work life. Oftentimes they're functioning quite well in their work life, and they come to me for coaching because they can't follow through on details at home, and that's causing stress in their home life. But it's usually not being on time, repeating the same patterns, not being able to reach a goal that they've been trying to reach for years and years and years.
Right.
So lack of directedness, because they just live more or less like from day to day.
It sounds a lot like ADD in kids, just transferred to perhaps a less forgiving environment.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, but that. Also the environment shift to the workplace is sometimes really useful. People that kids that have ADD sometimes really thrive when they start to work, because the rewards, especially if they're it's based on what they're producing, is right next to them and it's real close. So there's a short delay. The reward is at the end of the week or the end of the month and not at the end of the semester.
Or at the end of 12 years of schooling.
Right, right. So that and also you can take breaks. You don't have to sit in your chair. You move around. And if you have the right kind of job, an ADD person is a great fit. They need to learn how to master whatever the demands of the environment are. But once they begin to plan for it, It can go quite well.
Let's step back for a second just to look at ADD. We've heard so much more about it in recent years, partly just because we've begun to recognize it. But what portion of the American population overall appears to have ADD? I guess that's a good place to start.
Well, it depends on which epidemiologic study you look at. But the one out of the Mayo Clinics 2 years ago, which is seeming very, very exhausting, and very thorough, estimated around 7.5% of children born at a certain time have a bunch of years around the Mayo Clinic have attention deficit disorder. That's 7.5%, which is quite a large number. When I was in medical school, we learned it was 3%, and now it certainly has crept up.
And what's the theory behind why it's creeping up?
Well, partly because of identification, partly identifying also the people that have the inattentive type in childhood. We all knew and could identify the Dennis the Menace characters, the hyperactive, impulsive, acting out characters, the squeaky wheels. But the inattentive type, often girls, but certainly the guys are in that population. Don't cause trouble and don't call attention to themselves, but are usually underperforming.
But does it seem that there's a growing portion of Americans who have ADD, or just that we're recognizing it?
Well, it may be an interaction. I mean, we all have ADD. We all don't have enough attention to deal with this incredible environment that we're in, this ADD-ogenic environment where everybody has pseudo-ADD. There's too much to do, too much information, too much possibilities, and too little training to delay and to anticipate, to contemplate. Everything is now. Rewards are immediate, and boredom is to be shunned and avoided.
Nancy Rady, what about the workplace then? Do you find that in general American workplaces that face this 8 million adults coming in, or some portion of them, are ready to deal with it? Do employers recognize ADD, and what do they do about it once they recognize it? On the one hand, if it's a great fit, as you've both pointed out, they may have a tremendously productive employee. I have a feeling, though, very often it's not such a great fit, and they've also got the employee the other situation, someone who's distracted, disorganized, et cetera. These are kind of the hallmarks traditionally of a bad employee. So what happens?
Well, I tend to work with the good employees. I mean, the ones where the supervisors or their bosses are frustrated with them and saying, you are of great value to our company. However, you're really slacking in these other areas, or, we can't let these other things go on. So I then come in and help them figure out ways to compensate and work, with the type of brain that they have. So take, for instance, when they fill out their expense report or something, either to try to delegate that stuff out or to listen to music or to stand up and move around more.
Anything that helps them focus on that detailed task.
Exactly. Exercise, maybe get a diagnosis, see a psychiatrist if they haven't, learn more. But basically the whole gist of this is learning more about how you operate and how to get out of your own way, so that you can move forward and kind of be on some of these trips or potholes that you get into. But what I'm seeing more and more of is employers really embracing coaching as a means to help employees with ADD. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that executive coaching and personal and professional coaching has already opened the door for
everything's
that.
Being coached these days. It seems like every other person has a coach of some kind. Jack Beattie, here we are, a picture of an America where plenty of kids have ADD, and we know it, and we've known it for a while, and suddenly we're looking at the workplace, and, well, I guess it's logical. A bunch of them still have it when they go to the job.
Yes, and I'm wondering if in some strange historical way they got it from the job. I mean, what strikes me about this malady is its historical character. Before the Industrial Revolution, Immanuel Kant said, no straight thing was ever made out of the crooked timber of humanity. Hmm. Well, ever since, industrialism has been trying to make every crooked timber straight. I mean, when you read about the first generation that went into the factories, I mean, people used to take Mondays off. They would get drunk on Friday afternoons. Right. They would leave the machines in the middle of the... And they had to be broken, essentially, to the machine. And then in the 20th century, we had Frederick Taylor with the whole work study and scientific management, where they broke tasks down. And that is the grammar of work even today, where everything has this efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And you know, that's not really the way human beings, even at their best, operate. Some of the questions you ask to determine whether people have this malady: how often do you have problems remembering appointments? When you have a task that requires thought, how often do you delay getting started? That's describing human nature. And what's intolerable, is this workplace and this tailorized post-industrial workplace where any irregularity, any crooked timber of humanity is not welcome.
An illness created by the demands of a workplace, by the straitjacket, you're saying, and yet you know it's out there. It waits for us all. A man, a woman has got to make a buck. Jack, stand by. Dr. John Rady, Nancy Rady, we're talking tonight about adult ADD in the American workplace. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about adult ADD, attention deficit disorder, in the American workplace. You can join our conversation tonight. Is ADD a factor in your workplace? Do you suffer from it? Do your colleagues? Has ADD trailed you from childhood to adulthood and into the workplace? Have you just discovered that you or a colleague have ADD? And what's the impact on your work, on your workplace? Are there tasks you avoid? Can you tell your boss? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Dr. John Rady, Director of Research at Medfield State Hospital and Assistant Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and also by Nancy Rady, a leading authority on personal and professional coaching for people with attention deficit and hyperactive disorder. We're joined now from White Plains, New York, by Robert Todisco. He is an adult diagnosed with ADD. He's a partner in the law firm of Marino & Todisco, former vice president of the Attention Deficit Disorder Association. Robert Todisco, thanks for joining us.
Good evening. How you doing?
We're doing great. So tell us, when did you learn that you had ADD, and how has it followed you, interacted with you in the workplace?
Well, I can tell you that I was diagnosed approximately 5.5 years ago as an adult, and it has followed me in the workplace in both very good ways and very bad ways. When I left law school, for instance, I started out in the district attorney's office, and I was prosecuting street crime in the South Bronx,
yeah.
And the district attorney's office was tailor-made for someone with ADHD. It was a very exciting position. There was very little paperwork and detail. You had to be very good on your feet. There was a lot of excitement generated, and I have always found that I can hyper-focus when I'm on trial. And what happened to me was, after being there for a number of years, I left the district attorney's office and started in private practice, where I had to keep track of my time, I had to bill my clients, I had to be responsible for many administrative tasks in my office,
right.
And it was like hitting a brick wall. I did very well in the district attorney's office, but that different style of practice was very different.
So the trial work was great, but when you had to sort of run the whole operation soup to nuts, that was difficult. Is that when you said, maybe I've got a problem, and went for a diagnosis?
Actually, what prompted my diagnosis was that I have a small son, and when he was approximately 3 years old, I was very upset with myself for setting a poor example for him. For instance, you can't tell a child to pick up after himself if you're kind of all over the place. And so through a series of therapists and some recommendations, I was sent to a psychiatrist who sat with me, took a detailed clinical history, and diagnosed me with ADHD. And at that moment, my entire life made so much sense. I'm sure Dr. Rady's heard that before.
The kind of revelation, oh my God, I finally understand what's going on.
Exactly.
And how have you compensated, or how have you, I don't know, changed your way of working or thinking about work to deal with what you've learned?
I think that any adult with ADHD that's going to approach their working environment, and it's not just restricted to their work environment, it also, you know, there are relationship issues, you know, life at home, as Nancy was saying earlier, interaction with your children, there's a whole lot of other issues that come along, but I think what you find out is that, or my outlook on it, is all the times during my life where I thought I was somehow faking it to get by, now with my diagnosis and understanding how my brain works, I realize that I've been coping with something that I just didn't know what the name of it was. And so what I've tried to do is to look back on my life before my diagnosis and realize there were certain times in my life where I was very successful at doing one thing or another. Mm-hmm. And why was that? And how did that fit into the type of person I am and the way my brain is wired? And with my diagnosis and learning about it, I try to apply that with some knowledge now, and it is somewhat helpful, but it is still a struggle every day.
So have you changed your own workplace or the things that you focus on? Do you, when you talk with other adult ADD folks, do you suggest that they think about actually adjusting their work, maybe changing their work, to find something that fits with their strong suit, as you say?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I think is most important, and one of the things I've learned and I try to impress on other adults, is not so much the coping mechanisms that I've employed that have worked or haven't worked for me, but the process that got me there, taking a good, hard look at yourself and what you excel at and where your weaknesses are. And I think it's all about gravitating towards those strengths and learning to dance around your weaknesses. But you have to understand and respect both of them. because I firmly believe that there are certain things that we as people with ADHD can do that the quote-unquote normal people certainly can't do. And
Such as, like what?
Well, for instance, I'm an active litigator,
yeah.
And one of the things that I do, I take medication to cope with my ADHD,
mm-hmm.
but when I'm on trial, for instance, I don't take my medication because I think it makes me too methodical, it makes me think too much. It's very helpful to prepare for trial.
Right.
When I have to be on my feet and I have to perform and I have to change my game plan at a second's notice because a witness says something
right.
or deviates, I like to rely on the sharpness of my reflexes that I believe my ADHD brings me.
That kind of racing mind or aspects of it can actually be an advantage in that environment.
Absolutely. I was telling someone earlier today that we had someone that would come into the support group that I run who was a physician who felt most at home in a busy emergency room. It was kind of like being in the middle of that chaos. He felt as if the rest of the world kind of caught up to the speed that his brain works at. And I always felt that when I was in the DA's office. The complaint room that we dealt with was, I guess, an attorney's version of an emergency room. And you have to deal with these kind of crazy situations on a moment's notice, and you have to think on your feet. And I was always very good at that, and I could always rely on myself.
Dr. John Rady, how about it then? Do you approve of this? Robert takes his medication when he wants to be calm and methodical, and when he wants to be on his toes, ripping and snorting in the courtroom, he lets go of it and rides that ADD. What do you say?
Well, yeah, no, I think there are some that are actually on medicine. Their performance is enhanced, and some that have this sort of methodical drag and do better and be more natural and. Less thoughtful when they're responding to all kinds of things. One thing that is important, I think, is ADD people are very good at in being intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's because they've had lots of practice. Because they pick up only a little bit of the information anyway because they're forgetting it or they don't log it in.
So they have to intuit.
They have to intuit all the time, like what they had for lunch. Is an intuition. It's a guess.
Rather than a specific, concrete
right.
memory.
Right. So they're very good at mm-hmm. making these intuitive leaps all the time and picking out patterns and using them, especially when they're in a stressful situation. Stress in itself is something that is a treatment for ADD, if you will. And we see that in the people that do better at a fast-paced job like being in the DA's office or being in the emergency room. One of my very first patients was a woman who was a head nurse of one of our ICUs in town and really needed her medicine when she was off work, when she was at home.
Right.
Because she would space out. Yeah. Well, she would space out and forget to do things because there wasn't that constant drumbeat of demand and need to respond to situations. And but she was quite impaired at home. And with the medicine, things went remarkably better for her and her family.
Well, 8 million American adults with ADD, and it looks like about half of them are on the line waiting to get on the phone, on the air with us. Let's invite them on. Jeanette is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeanette. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I was diagnosed about 5 years ago with ADD as an adult, and which made my childhood make so much more sense. I work as a nanny, and I have had to really struggle with ADD as an ongoing influence.
And what part of your job is a struggle because of that, Jeanette?
Well, working as a modern nanny, there's so much that you have to remember. You know,
you're scheduling the kids, I suppose.
Absolutely. Scheduling the children. A lot of times you're expected to do a lot of house manager type things. So, you know, the grocery list. You know, I mean, sometimes it's such little things because I didn't put the credit card back where it belongs. So I got all the way to the store and realized. And now I've had to reschedule my whole day.
Right.
So I had to go back.
Right. Jeanette, let me ask you, does your employer know that you have ADD?
The current one does, but I've had other employers that I've kept it hidden from because it tends to make them very nervous.
And what about your current employer? What's their attitude toward it? Do they cut you some slack because of it? Or, you know, how is it as an attribute to bring to a job in your case?
I don't think they're quite cognizant of what it entails.
Right.
And there have been times when I've had to look her in the eye and say, look, this is what's going on. This is why this happened this way. Mi culpa. I'm working on it. This is, you know, and be straight with her. But for the most part, I'm so used to, since it wasn't a diagnosis as an adult, kind of making an internal struggle.
Right. It's your cross to bear, John Rady.
But your energy and your enthusiasm and the creativity, which you also bring to the children, I'll bet you, is something that your employers really value.
Absolutely my asset. But it means that because my job is so detail-focused, that I end up using all the focus I have. And I've had to turn over pretty much my finances and, you know, a lot of my personal scheduling over to my boyfriend because I can't cope with it.
No focus left at the end of that day. Jeanette, we've got it, and appreciate your call. Robert DiDisco, what about this issue of ADD at work and employer tolerance, even the law, the Americans with Disabilities Act, does it apply here?
It really depends on a lot of things, and it's probably one of the harder questions there is to answer. I represent a lot of parents trying to get services for their children with disabilities, not just ADHD, but you know, the whole spectrum of learning disabilities,
yeah,
and other disorders. But when it comes to an adult, the question is not that easy. It really depends on the employer, who it is, the type of institution you're working at, whether it is something that is publicly funded or not, the size of the institution. And there are certain jobs where, as a practical matter, you have to take into consideration. For instance, if you are an aggressive person on a partnership track at some firm and you believe that telling someone about your ADHD is going to change the way they look at you, unfortunately, while it may be your asset, there are many people who believe that those employees are not the most reliable employees, and so it can hurt you in a practical sense. So there's no real answer legally as to whether or not you should tell your employer. It depends on the type of employer, the type of job. You know, if you are asking for reasonable accommodations and there is a disabilities office, if you work in some type of an institutionalized setting, then it may be something that you need to ask for some type of accommodations, and that can be very helpful.
But what? How much are they required to give you in terms of accommodations, or can they just show you the door, or are people protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act?
See, the problem with the Americans with Disabilities Act, as it sits for people with the quote-unquote invisible disabilities, there has to be access for people with wheelchairs or blind people or people with disabilities that are objectively recognizable. But for someone who is working at a particular job, they've gotten in there, they have access to their employment. Whether or not they can accurately perform that job is a very, very different story. And, you know, people can get fired for any reason that there is. If you start documenting that you're coming in late because you have a disability and you have difficulty with, I don't think it's as much time management as I believe it's time perception,
mm-hmm,
that we have. You certainly can't manage something if you can't perceive it accurately.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that becomes a very real and practical problem that adults have, is that if they sometimes in a private employment setting tell their employers, it's kind of like almost looking for an excuse to get rid of that particular employee, and it can be very difficult.
Nancy Rady, you've said that a lot of your employees come in with assets that they're bringing to the companies, but I'm sure it's not always that simple. What do you advise people if they ask you whether or not they should talk to their employer about the fact that they have ADD?
Well, I kind of ride on the back of what Robert said, and I believe that a lot of it depends on what exactly they're struggling with. It depends on what type of accommodation they're looking for. The one thing that I've found is ADD people, especially the newly diagnosed ones, are so happy to have an answer for you know, for what they've been struggling with.
We can hear that in Robert's case and in others, but so...
Oh, my gosh, yeah, that they just want to go around and tell everyone, you know?
Whether they should or not.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, exactly.
And I call them the born-again ADDers.
Yeah.
I found the answer.
Yeah. Right. And so they don't really think of the repercussions because to them it's answered everything.
Insight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so so usually I tell people to err on the other side, to really just kind of
be cool.
Back and wait. Just sit back
and wait. Don't rush out there too hard. And Dr. Rainey, what about Jack Beatty's point that what he sees sitting back here is not necessarily some kind of pathology, but rather just a misfit between a part of the spectrum of human nature and the efficiency-oriented modern industrial economy we find ourselves in?
I think that's probably correct, that our genes and our basic information hasn't changed all that much from when we were living on the plains and out hunting and trying to find new game and adapt to the environment that was changing all the time. And there you see the hunter idea that ADD people make great hunters and questionably good farmers. They have a hard time sitting at in their desks, a hard time sitting in front of the computer screen, especially if it's a boring task. So what has happened is the culture has evolved so much and so fast and so rapidly and changed so much that our genes just really haven't kept up with it. We haven't selected for an attention system that would help us manage all these incredible array of tasks we have before us.
And yet, Jack Beatty, here's the system that we're in, and we've got it, and when it comes to work, most people have to learn how to deal with it to put bread on the table.
You've got no choice, and you keep, you know, for some people, it's an ordeal. But, you know, it seems to me the key thing, as someone who struggled with this all my life, the key thing I think everyone finds out is not only does your employer have to cut you slack, you have to cut yourself slack.
Ditto.
I mean, you can't be trying to plane out your own crooked timber. You just got to sort of say, wait a minute, I've got to work around this. And what bothers me when you see it in young people is that they tend to blame themselves for really what is a matter of...
That's probably the biggest problem there is, I think.
Mm. Robert Tedesco, you're saying?
Yes, that the disorder affects the self-esteem of people with ADHD so negatively, because we live in a society where if you are not on the mark, so to speak, you are considered lazy or an underachiever. When I was young, I like to say to people when I speak, when I was young, they didn't call it ADHD. We were just bad. We were underachievers.
Right.
They didn't have a term for it, so to speak. And it affects self-esteem in such a negative way that it's important that these children or these adults realize that there are things that they contribute that have value. And I think that's a key thing, is to stop beating up yourself.
Robert Tedesco, we've got to take a break, and I know we have to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us, Robert Tedesco at Marino and Tedesco in White Plains, New York. We're talking tonight about adult ADD in the American workplace. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about adult ADD, attention deficit disorder, in the American workplace. You can join our conversation tonight. Is ADD a factor in your workplace? Has ADD trailed you from childhood to adulthood and into the job? What is the best kind of work for ADD, adult Americans? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight in the studio by Dr. John Rady, Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and by Nancy Rady, a leading authority on personal and professional coaching for people with attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. We're joined now from Boston by Dr. Timothy Willens. He's Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and Director of Substance Abuse Services in the Pediatric and Adult Psychopharmacology Clinics at Massachusetts General Hospital. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Timothy Willens.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. Talk to us, if you would, about drugs and medication for adult ADD as opposed to childhood ADD. Is there a difference? Is Ritalin what people turn to? Are there other drugs that are more effective?
We're looking at that currently. There's a tremendous amount of research going on right now in that specific area, and it's only been a little over a year that the first FDA-approved compound actually came out specifically available for adult ADHD. as it turns out, the short answer is that the same treatments that seem to work in children are working in adults, more or less. It's slightly less response rate, a little bit more side effects in adults relative to kids, but nevertheless, pretty much the same agents. We use Strattera is the only FDA-approved agent. It's a new medicine available.
Strattera.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yep. And then we're using the stimulant medications, the Ritalin-like medications. The one that's right around the corner from approval is Adderall, actually. It's an a constellation of amphetamine salts and Ritalin itself and that class of medications. All work.
And when you meet an ADD person who comes in and says, Doc, should I be on a medication, on a drug of some kind, how do you assess whether even knowing they have ADD, whether they're a candidate for that? Is it everybody or just some?
Typically what we're looking for is the kind of cardinal symptoms that you've been hearing about, the problems, specific little problems within ADHD. And usually when there's at least moderate impairment, it's causing problems in the workplace, causing problems at home, causing problems driving, things like that, then we're really obligated to talk about treatment. And when you talk about treatment, you really have to think about medications very quickly in the algorithm, followed by certain types of therapy.
And what's your thought as there's a big bunch of American children who have been diagnosed and have been treated from an early age, as they are now moving into adulthood? Is that going to change the way ADD is understood by Americans? Will they be more effective at dealing with it as adults? What are the implications of an early diagnosed generation now reaching adulthood?
Well, I wish I had some profound answer there to say, in fact, yes, there's this much better outcome, that these individuals are better tolerating the environment, doing much better in life. I can tell you one data point that we've established, and that is looking at substance abuse, for example, as an outcome. If you don't treat ADHD, you have twice the risk for substance abuse across your lifespan and twice the risk to smoke cigarettes.
Because you're looking for relief of some kind somewhere.
You know, we think that's it, and in fact, we have the first data that actually support that coming out of our group. But the good news is, if you treat ADHD with medications, we've demonstrated and other have demonstrated, and we've looked at the world's literature there, you actually reduce that risk for substance abuse and cigarette smoking. So there is one tangible fact now that we can hand parents of kids growing up to say, look, we have one of the first big outcomes is if you treat ADHD, you're going to actually diminish the risk for cigarette smoking and diminish the risk for later substance
abuse. So don't ignore it. Let's deal with it. Let's turn to calls. Chris is calling from Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hello. Simply put, I was diagnosed at 27.
Okay.
And I was diagnosed at the age of 4 at being hyper. My parents decided at the time, this was 1974, mind you, that the medications were a little too harsh for a 4-year-old.
Okay.
So they thought I'd grow out of it. And at 27, I had a job loss, and I realized I had to start taking action. And I went to a counselor, and then I got referred to a psychiatrist for diagnosis and medication. They tried dexedrine. I don't know if that's the Ritalin types or not. And they basically – and the side effects were just so awful that when I got to the VA – They put me on antidepressants, and
right.
I've been doing better with I do better with the antidepressants. And my question or comment has been, I seem to know it's like your guest mentioned about workplaces and mentioning employers that you have this. It's still there is somewhat of a stigma to it.
Tell us if you would, Chris, about you said you lost a job because of it. Can you
yeah.
share a little bit of what happened there?
Simply put, what I found out before I was diagnosed was I always went through this tendency, a vicious cycle. I would get very frustrated with the job because I was always working the entry level, very entry level.
And was that, do you think, because ADD was keeping you from being promoted?
No. It was just basically because it was always like a, simply to put it in a simple analogy, worker ant kind of mentality.
Okay.
You were just basically a worker and that's all you did. And it was basically a lot of it was general labor kind of jobs.
Yeah.
And my bosses, some of my supervisors hated the fact that I seemed to be a little bit brighter than the average worker. And my personal relationships with my coworkers and sometimes with friends was always at times very rough.
So have you found a better way?
I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
I still attend counseling, and I still see a psychiatrist for to monitor my medication. But I found out later that if I a decision I made when I was 19 to join the Navy, which I then was on, I was deployed on Operation Desert Shield, mm-hmm. I never would be able to do now because I was taking medication and that would automatically disqualify me.
Right.
But I do believe that cost me, this condition also cost me my Naval career.
Because?
I didn't know how to focus on certain tasks, especially with my schoolwork.
Right.
And I hyper-focused because I worked very hard at my schoolwork to the point where I burned out.
And off you went to the Navy. Well, yeah. There's a story that illuminates one kind of path through this. Chris, thanks a lot for your call. Joellen is calling from Bedford, New Hampshire. Hi, Joellen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. At this point, I was going to want to have a dialogue, but at this point, I'd like to just sort of state my differences from what I've been hearing.
Okay.
I work with trauma. And the symptoms of trauma can be very similar to the symptoms of ADD.
You work with trauma in what capacity, Joellen?
And as a psychotherapist.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
I think the symptoms of ADD are close to the symptoms of trauma, and that ADD is often misdiagnosed, especially because it's become so popularized. For example, the being distracted, being spaced out, are absolutely symptoms of trauma. They can be symptoms of other things. They could be symptoms of depression or even other things.
So are you saying that your experience would lead you to think that some portion of people who think they have ADD or even diagnosed that way in fact just had some, what, childhood trauma that's left them distracted?
Well, distracted, the term is dissociated. And when you're dissociated, you're not there. You're somewhere else. Which is what being spaced out is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are traumatized are also characterized by hypervigilance. And hypervigilance is an extreme kind of attentiveness.
And what difference does it make, in your mind, Joellen, if they're diagnosed as ADD rather than seen as someone who has trauma in their background?
Because trauma can be treated naturally without drugs. I do a kind of trauma that's known as EMDR, and using EMDR, it's possible to get to the things that caused the trauma, to process them through so that people return to a normal state.
That's fascinating, Joel, and thank you very much for calling that in.
Yeah, I want to say I work with children as well as adults, and children come in who have been assessed as ADD, and I can work with them on trauma things, and they're fine.
Well, we hear it, and thanks for your call. Dr. John Rady, how about it? Some portion of ADD folks, in fact, have a trauma in the background?
Oh, I think ADD is a setup for PTSD or trauma every day, and because people with ADD are constantly traumatizing themselves, and it may be one of the precursor potentials for people who develop PTSD. And I've been working with Bessel van der Kolk for the past 14 years trying to figure out whether it's attention or trauma that is the root of so many of our people's distress.
But Joellen's suggesting, I think, if I heard her right, that the trauma would precede the...
It can, certainly. We can see kids that have been repeatedly traumatized who come in and present with all the symptoms of ADD. There's no question about that. It's the interface is really where I think most people lie.
Don is calling from Townsend, Massachusetts. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hello. I was actually calling initially. I have inattentive type ADD, and I may piggyback a little on the last caller.
Yeah.
I was wondering more or less in terms of treatments outside of medication. I guess overall I was wondering, are we almost more prone culturally or in this country, America, versus other countries regarding ADD? Or, is it...
Or is it a global phenom? Let us pick that up. Timothy Willens, do you have any sense?
That's actually been evaluated, and it turns out one of the arguments about this issue about a high-paced society, et cetera, it's compelling from a literary standpoint, but when you actually get down and look at the data, it turns out that the rates of ADHD in this country are statistically the same as they are in every other country that's been evaluated, including looking at Asian countries, Middle America, South America, looking in African nations, in the different provinces in Canada, et cetera. And it still pegs out around 6 to 8%. The rates in adults is less well known because it's less studied. So it turns out that we're actually, you know, in terms of the world, the United States, it's about right in the middle in terms of the actual rate of ADHD. To answer the question about other treatments for the condition, medications certainly are right now the only ones that have been demonstrated unequivocally effective. But cognitive behavioral therapies, there's been now a few trials of using very structured, proactive therapies that work very well on medicated adults with ADHD. Diet and other things like that just simply haven't panned out in children. It's not clear what that would do in adults. They just haven't been studied.
So you're saying therapy is sort of sit down with the psychiatrist type therapy?
Well, it's a very structured therapy. In fact, Dr. Rady, who's sitting with you over a decade ago, commented on the lack of usefulness of kind of traditional psychotherapies. But they've developed these very proactive, structured therapies that don't allow you to be too distracted. They're very goal-directed in terms of setting agendas to the things that you want to achieve, how you're going to get there, what's happening today to get there. You have to do homework. It's not very different in some ways than what than Nancy Rady is talking about with coaching. I mean, it's kind of an integrative type of coaching in a psychotherapy in some ways.
So get your meds and get some insight. Nancy Rady, does that ring true to you?
Oh, absolutely. As he was talking, I wrote down on a piece of paper, coaching, because that is what Tim is saying. He basically described what coaching is, although coaching is not therapy. What a coach does is forward the agenda, to speak in kind of California talk.
Meaning?
Forward the agenda of the client, meaning that I, as a coach, can only help the client obtain whatever goals they want. And that sounds very simple, but it's kind of
complicated. So you make up a game plan for it and say, all right, here's how to go after that with your...
Except it's I said it sounds simple, but
yeah.
But it isn't. It's the thing that's different about coaching is that you have to want to make whatever change it is. And I am there as the outside structuring force and the one to remind you that that's what you want. Tim, did you have something to say?
I was going to say, what cognitive therapy will do then is, why don't you want it, A or B? Why are you self-sabotaging? Why are you consistently know that you have to do this and yet you don't do it? And they're trying to tease out what it is that may be doing it. And it turns out there's massive differences in adults with ADHD and non-ADHD adults with their belief systems, what they think is going to occur. And it makes sense why that should happen. Somebody who's lived with a certain set of events that always occurs that's deleterious,
right.
Even when you correct it in front of them with the medications, and I can assure you, you can reverse the symptoms within weeks, they still will do the same thing. And that's where the cognitive therapy comes in.
Well, it sounds like a great combination of ways of approaching it to make it all work out in the workplace. Our time is run away from us. I want to thank all of my guests tonight. Dr. Timothy Willens at MGH, Massachusetts General Hospital, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nancy Rady, coach for those with ADD and in the workplace, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Dr. John Rady, associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, a last thought goes to you, my friend.
Well, a quote from this New York Times article, quirks in the wiring of the mind still generate very little sympathy.
Yeah, amen. It's true, but hang in there, everybody. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.